More than 100 young people were arrested, often in dawn raids on their homes, in the wake of the Gaza demonstrations in London. They had joined thousands of others to protest Israel's brutal assault. Apart from their outrage over the deaths of around 1,400 civilians, including 400 children, these young people had something else in common. All but two charged were Muslims. Sentencing which followed was described as disproportionate by many. This agenda will examine if they were targeted for their faith. London police and the judiciary have been accused of targeting and persecuting young Muslim protesters who took part in the demonstrations of January 2009 against Israel's attack on Gaza. And the evidence against the authorities, not the protesters, is damning. Video footage reveals heavy-handed and often violent policing, and defense lawyers have uncovered misleading use of evidence, some of which has led to what has been described as excessive and inappropriate sentencing. The case of Jake Smith was particularly revealing. He was charged with violent disorder, but the police were forced to drop all evidence because of their own flawed information. In addition, his legal team discovered, far from Jake assaulting the police, some officers had brutally attacked him. Media investigations suggest there was a coordinated attempt to criminalize prosecutors, designed to scare young people from taking part in future protests. Concern has also been raised that the majority of the accused were Muslims, who were treated by police as if they were guilty of terrorist charges, following dawn raids on their homes some months after the demonstrations. Today's agenda asks the question, Britain, are Muslim demonstrators treated fairly by police and courts? Well, the video footage in many cases turned out to be more damning against the authorities than the protesters, and the police handling of the Gaza protests was different to others held in the British capital. Our first guest will certainly testify to that. He was one of those arrested. Jake Smith walked free from court after his lawyers exposed that far from their client being the one causing the trouble, it was Jake who was assaulted. My next guest was arrested and charged with aggravated racism after he protested and disrupted a classical music concert given by a visiting Israeli string quartet. After 2 years and 22 court appearances and various legal shenanigans, Nick Napier's ordeal ended in a resounding victory for him. But that was in Scotland, where the legal system operates differently to England. And my final guest is Mohammed Cosbar from the British Muslim Initiative. He is also the head of the North London Central Mosque and is an active member of the Gaza Protest Action Support Group. But Jake, I want to start with you. Can you tell me a little bit about your story and when you were arrested and what happened?
I was arrested on the 10th of January 2009, which is where there was a massive demonstration, I think 150,000. Very diverse demonstration which ended with the police pinning in protesters, assaulting them, and the camera team and intelligence gathering police unit interviewed me, asked my name, etc., and then arrested me on that day. And then I was on
and
bail.
And did they tell you what they were arresting you for?
Yeah, they said quite strong charges at the time. They said things like inciting riot as well as violent disorder. But then when I got to the police station, it was quite unclear what they were actually charging me with for a while. And then when I returned to bail in September, I think it was, 2009, they said that they were charging me with two counts of violent disorder. One on the 3rd, where there was a big demonstration which the police later attacked and trapped people in a underpass tunnel and attacked people there. They said they were charging me with violent disorder on that day. My solicitors requested all video evidence relating to both days, any video footage showing evidence of me or any evidence regarding me whatsoever to be submitted so that we could review it.
So did the police have any evidence against you?
On the 3rd they had absolutely nothing. They were using video footage which wasn't me, it was someone else throwing a stick, and that was on CCTV footage. And as soon as I saw it, I knew that it wasn't me, and I denied.
But you got a chance to see it before you were charged?
I wasn't allowed to view any of the video evidence, other than my solicitor was allowed a copy, but he wasn't allowed to send that to me, so I had to go up to and see my solicitor and look at it there, which was a bit tedious, but so straight away I said that wasn't me, but we had to prove that it wasn't me because they were wearing similar clothes to what I was wearing on that day. And then on the 10th they'd got evidence of me just on the protest, kind of with my hands on barriers, defending myself from the police, kind of attacking people. And we were quite worried about that one, because people that had been advised by duty solicitors at that point, we knew had been pleading guilty and been sent for custodial sentences, and quite ridiculous sentences, really.
Well, I mean, we did invite members of the Metropolitan Police onto the show, and they said that they wouldn't be able to take part because there are still people going through the courts. We won't discuss live cases, which because of sub judice. But Mick, you had 2 years of being in and out of the courts. What did you do?
I suspect your viewers will find it difficult to believe that for most of those 2 years we waited to find out what the content of the charges against us was. We were charged with racism for protesting the visit to the Edinburgh Festival by some Israeli official cultural ambassadors, guys who had said that a rifle in one hand and a violin in the other was the ultimate Zionist statement, quote unquote. We consulted with Palestinians and they said they're absolutely appropriate targets for cultural boycott. But your viewers might find it difficult to believe that, having been charged with racism for opposition to the Israeli state policies, we waited for a couple of years for the legal prosecutor to reveal his hand. And what he said in open court, provoking laughter and, you know, throughout the court, was that to utter the words, to say the words genocide in Gaza, or to say the words end the siege of Gaza, were unlawful and racist. Now that was thrown out of court, but I think Jake's a lucky young man to have escaped from a deliberate government policy to criminalise solidarity with the people of Palestine and to criminalise opposition to aggressive wars.
Well, you just said that you laughed in court, but to be fair, you know, you're no spring chicken, you're a seasoned veteran campaigner for Palestinian rights. It hasn't been a laughing matter, has it, Mohammed Kosbar, for the young Muslim men who were attending their first ever demonstration and ended up getting prison sentences? What sort of impact has this had on the Muslim community?
It is a great impact on the Muslim community because they've been shocked by this news. If we compare what these young men and women did and what the football hooligans, for example, do usually in football matches, or what we've seen in the G20, which is not far away from Gaza protests. So it is a huge difference how the police treated the Gaza demonstrations and how they treated the other demonstrations. So we think these people haven't been treated fairly. They've been treated very harsh from the police, and unfortunately this case turned as a political case more than as a justice case. So unfortunately the police get the justice system get involved in this as a political case more than anything else. So we think that we have to work very hard to get the justice, really the real justice, to these young men and women, and to let them believe on the British system and the justice system here in Britain.
I mean, this has shattered some people's faith in British justice.
That's right. I mean, that's right. These young men and women, most of them are students, are university students, and as you said, most of them, they are the first time who attended these demonstrations, just to express their feeling about what's happening, the carnage happening in what was happening in Gaza. So they didn't do something substantial, something great to get this punishment actually and these sentences. So they've been promised by the police when they get arrested that if you confessed, so you will get a very low sentence, like you know.
What, confess, admit to something that they hadn't done?
That's right, but they've been intimidated in a way, because they experienced this. This is the first time they experienced something like that. So they were really scared, and they said to confess and get a little sentence better than go ahead and you don't know what would happen after that.
Well, I know you want to come into this, Mick, but before we do, I want to check out some of the grim statistics which came out of the Gaza war and the protests which followed.
December 2008 was the day Israel launched its war on Gaza, killing over 1,400 people, including over 400 children, in 3 weeks of relentless bombardment. 27.5 million is the price of arms exported to Israel by Britain in 2008, ahead of the war. £136 million worth of arms have been exported from the UK, making Britain complicit in war crimes committed against the Palestinian people. 119 is the number of people arrested in the UK by police, with many of these arrests made in dawn raids, which included the handcuffing of entire families and the seizing of phones and computers. Police made more arrests after the Gaza protests than at any political demonstration since the poll tax riots. 79 predominantly young people of exemplary character were charged, with 77 being Muslim. 12 was the age of the youngest person arrested by police, and the majority of the others were mostly under 25 years old. Every person charged was ordered to surrender his or her passport. Despite the fact that almost all were British citizens, they were served with immigration notices which stated that they could be deported, depending on the outcome of criminal proceedings. 18 months to 2 years was the sentencing delivered, after the defendants were pressured by both the preceding judge and their own solicitors to plead guilty to the offences with which they were charged. 33 complaints were made to the Independent Police Complaints Commission.
Mick, what was there anything in particular that struck you about those statistics?
Yeah, well, I think, before you made a jibe about my advanced years, I'd like to respond by saying I don't think that was a significant factor. I think what was different in our case from the young guys who've been done for the London protests is that they came together in a burst of anger and outrage at the massacres in Gaza, and they were not organised. They just came together spontaneously. They didn't even know each other, and they were ripe for the plucking for a counter-offensive that picked them up months afterwards. We were organised from the very start, and I just stress that organisation is the key to defend yourself, and we need to get an organisation. My other point would be that I disagree with my friend on the right here. We shouldn't talk about being disillusioned with British justice. To paraphrase Gandhi, it would be a very good idea. I spoke 2 days ago with Paddy Hill. Paddy Hill was one of the Birmingham Six. He did 16 years in prison for a crime that he manifestly did not commit, and like many, many Irish at that time, they were sent down as innocent people to do very long stretches in prison.
Just
and
for our viewers' benefit, these were the accused of a bombing.
Of the Birmingham bombing, and then others were done for
during
the guilt of bombing.
The Irish troubles.
The guilty people went free, and wholly innocent people were sentenced to long periods in prison. And everybody knew that they were innocent. Everybody knew, except the appeal court judges. Now, I think the Muslims today are the new Irish. And I don't think the answer, are they being sentenced for their faith, is true. They are not being sentenced for their faith. Most of the Irish, none of the Irish that I know were Muslims, and they weren't sentenced because they were Catholics either. They were sentenced because they did not support the crimes of the British government. And my final point is this: you cannot separate foreign adventures and aggression and crime from domestic life. It is inevitable that if you resist wars abroad and ethnic cleansing by Israel, you will face repression at
but
home. As
77
night
of those charged, there were 79 charged, 77 were Muslims.
And most of those sentenced in Ireland were Catholics, but and it's nothing to the religion.
But we've heard from Jake that there was 150,000 at the demonstration that he was filmed in, and you said it was a very diverse, lots of different...
I think Muslims are being targeted. I think just the mere facts speak the truth.
And they all were served with papers saying that they could be deported, even though they were British passport holders.
I spoke to some of the people in court, or the defendants, and it was very chaotic, and I agree with what's been said about it. The defence needs to be more organised, so we need to be able to protect ourselves in future.
Somebody was allowed to keep their passport though, weren't they?
Yeah, I was born in Britain, I've always had a British passport, etc. And my solicitor said, well, why is he having his passport taken? Oh, because we've got to take everybody else's. But actually my solicitor looked into it, and one of the Israeli Zionist demonstrators on some small counter demonstration in Trafalgar Square was allowed to keep their passport with the justification that they were allowed to go back to Israel, which shows you the hypocrisies here.
So we have a double system in operation here, Mohammed. I mean, is the British Muslim Initiative or any other Muslim groups, you know, what sort of action, if any, are you taking?
Actually, before we didn't take any action because we thought that justice will take, will be justice for these young guys. But after we've seen the sentences and start, you know, the news appear, so we thought that, no, this is not right. We should take an action. Actually, the three organizations which they organized most of the demonstration, or all of them, which is BMI, British Muslim Initiative, Stop the War, and PSC, Palestinian Solidarity Campaign. So we get together, we set like some sort of committee which to just only working for this case, and we managed to do a few things, or many things actually. We went to the media first, and I think now there is awareness among the media about what's going on and about these harsh sentences on these people. The second things we did, we had a petition written by thousands of people and sent to the Home Office to complain about these sentences. We had demonstration in front of the courts. In every trial took place, we had demonstrators there to say no to these sentences and give justice to these people.
Well, the trials are continuing, and they will be continuing right through until June. During one hearing, it emerged that shoe-throwing had become a legitimate form of protest, as James Rawson reveals.
The then US President George W. Bush ducked quickly to avoid being hit during a press conference in December 2008, but Muntada al-Zaidi was jailed. He emerged 9 months later and was given a hero's welcome before learning that his shoe gesture had inspired many imitators, including here in the UK. Now, to the amazement of many, it has emerged that the Metropolitan Police conceded that Muslims are entitled to throw shoes in ritual protest. News of the concession was revealed during the controversial West London trials of more than 70 demonstrators who were charged with violent disorder after last year's Gaza protests outside the Israeli embassy. The lawyer representing one shoe-throwing client explained it was simply a form of ritual protest and therefore not a criminal act of violence. Judge Dennis agreed, adding it was more of a symbolic political gesture. The police first reached their decision last year with Stop the War organisers. As a result, in January 2009, anti-war protesters advertised a demonstration outside Downing Street by posting a photograph of a pair of old shoes under the words, "Bring your old shoes to throw at useless Gordo," in reference to the British Prime Minister Gordon Brown.
Mohammed, can anyone throw shoes, or is this strictly the preserve of Muslims?
Actually, it is a traditional act. When you are frustrated, the most assaulted thing you can do to throw a shoe on a person. So it's a matter of frustration amongst the people who do that. I mean, It become normal after the famous shoots through on George Bush. After that, the whole world actually knew about it and start happening here and there. It doesn't mean that I advise people to do that, but there is nothing wrong with doing of throwing shoes to, on someone which you are frustrated with, as long as you don't harm anyone or don't hurt anyone.
Well, so. I know that it has moved north of the border into Scotland, but I have to say that the police did complain, Mick, because people threw clogs and ski boots.
Yeah, a senior police officer did confide to me his disappointment that some of the people had taken the injunction to throw shoes symbolically at the US consulate in Edinburgh, and a few had chucked ski boots. But I think that indicated their rage at the massacres that were taking place. It's a humorous issue, but underlying it, of course, is the brutal ending of the lives of, you know, 1,400 people in Gaza. So, I mean, I don't want to criticise my, you know, Muslim brothers and sisters, but I don't think they should have the sole right to throw shoes. But
There is other means they can do, actually,
We can show contempt in many ways. Some of us will use our vote in the coming period, although it's difficult to ration the contempt between what's available. But, I mean, I think the old British tradition is not shoes. The British tradition is the riot. You know, that's what ended the poll tax in by the riots in Trafalgar Square. A long, long tradition of British people feeling disenfranchised and unable to use the political system
to bring about peaceful change. Well,
the poll tax riots.
The poll tax riots did stop the poll tax,
yep.
But what was the aim, would you say, of the Gaza demonstrations that descended into violence? It's disputable whether they went into a full-scale riot.
I think we have to have a sense of perspective here. The British government is trying to remove universal jurisdiction to allow Israeli politicians and generals, very much liable to be found guilty of war crimes, dropping white phosphorus on crowded neighbourhoods in Gaza. The British government's trying to remove universal jurisdiction so that they can come here unhampered. The violence that we are protesting against, it makes throwing an empty water bottle or even a placard in people's anger and fury utterly insignificant. And I dispute the word violence, and I think it's if we think about a commensurate response to what's happening in to what the British government supported in Gaza, then we don't even come near that. We the rage is justified. What we do need to do is channel it into more effective means, and that's no criticism of the demonstrators. I wish I'd been there, and I would have been as angry as anybody else. But we still need to find a way to stop the next adventure. Maybe it's an attack on Iran. God knows what these nutcases are capable of doing. They've devastated Iraq. They're blowing up innocent people travelling around Afghanistan. They support the next wave of ethnic cleansing is being openly planned by the Israelis in the West Bank, and the strangulation of Gaza continues. It's crime after crime after crime. And really, throwing a few sticks outside the Israeli embassy, it ain't now, and they deserve that times 100.
I completely agree.
I was just going to bring you in again, Jake. When you were arrested, were you asked about your faith, or if you were a Muslim, or...
I can't remember, to be honest, but just the scale of the way the police and prosecution dealt with it, and the media, their description was protesters were throwing missiles. Now, the concept of a missile, then this happens with the media and attack of Palestinians and Hamas as well, saying missiles. Well, if you call children throwing stones at cars and what have you, and in this case it's protesters throwing a few sticks as police come at them with riot shields and batons laying into them like some bloody battle, in a sense.
Well, you were laid into, weren't you? Did you have any idea of the amount of coppers who were taking a shot at you until you saw that footage?
No, not really, but it doesn't surprise me. Before that footage as well, I was hit over the head previously. They were using the long right shield as weapons on protesters, and I tried to talk to them. I was just like, what are you doing? This is just surreal. People are here to protest. People are here to demonstrate.
Well, to be fair to the police, they might have been just as fearful of the protesters.
Well, yeah, I think what happened is that at the top of the police, they're told to get pented up, if you like, to get their adrenaline going. These protesters are coming.
Well, we'll sit on that thought, and because we're heading up to the break, and we'll come back to that in a minute. But as usual, there's a question. I want to know who said this and what were the circumstances.
The reality is, no one will ever recover from this crime. Neither the victim's family nor the defendant's family. Both families and other individuals involved have been scarred for life.
Stay tuned for the answer right after the news. Welcome back to today's edition of The Agenda with me, Yvonne Ridley, and studio guests Nick Napier, Jake Smith and Mohammed Cosbar. As we went into the break, I asked who said, the reality is no one will ever recover from this crime, neither the victim's family nor the defendant's family. Both families and all the individuals involved have been scarred for life. The answer is Judge John Dennis, as he issued a community service order to an Israeli motorist involved in a hit-and-run accident resulting in the death of an off-duty policeman. This report in the Jewish Chronicle, which is pictured now, revealed the failed IDF soldier ran away from the scene of the crime because he suffered from panic attacks. Mick, this is the same judge who has sent down young men and women involved in the Gaza riots. Obviously, every case should be treated on its own merits. But were you surprised by that?
I've just come from a court case where there was an outbreak of common sense at the end, and the Scottish judge, the sheriff, I think made a perfectly good ruling, which has now gone into British law, distinguishing between opposition to Israel and racism. So I've had a very good experience recently. But the Scottish legal system also could send down Megrahi, whom everybody knew was innocent as well. Now, I'm horrified by this example. I really didn't know it. And it reminds me of the fact that Israel gets a special get-out-of-jail card here, no pun intended there, because not just this man who's a cop killer, who's been given 200 hours of community service. You can imagine a Muslim who's found guilty of a panic attack and runs away from a dead policeman would face not 200 hours of community service, but probably 200 years in prison. But this shines a light on something else. Israel is a very special case in Britain because, for example, it's completely illegal for kids in Britain to go and join the IDF, the silly name for the Israeli army. But young British men and some women go and join the Israeli army every summer and do military service. Now, it's completely illegal because Britain's not at war, for example, with Syria, and the Israeli army is at war with Syria, and it's illegal for a British citizen to go and join a foreign army that's at war with a country Britain's not. But there's never a single prosecution. So this example that you've given us, Yvonne, is absolutely horrific, and I think we should remind everybody who's going in front of this judge just what his record is. It's a scandalous example.
Well, as I say, every case is dealt on its own merits, and there was a suggestion that the policeman on the motorbike was speeding, but it is an interesting case. The judge was appointed as a Crown Court judge less than a year ago on the recommendation of the Justice Minister, Jack Straw. Did Judge Dennis have any words of comfort to you when you were acquitted?
Well, he didn't. My defence barrister wanted to read out why the prosecution had dropped all the charges against me just a day before my trial was going to begin, and he just started, the judge Dennis in this case just started shouting at me.
Because once you've been charged, you do have to appear in court anyway, yeah, for the charges to be dropped.
Yeah, it has to be officially dropped within the Crown Court. So I'm in the dock, and he just starts, because my barrister wants to read out a statement on behalf of the defence saying why we think the prosecution's dropped this so it can be heard in court, so that it has more weight. And he started screaming at me to get out of the dock, saying, Mr. Smith, get out of the dock, your good character has not been tainted, your good character has not been tainted.
I'm sure the judge didn't scream.
Well, he was shouting. And I was very, very frustrated, because it's been nearly a year and a half that I've had bail conditions, and to not even have my defence barrister be able to read out a statement on my behalf shows you...
So you wanted your day in court and just to be exonerated?
Just the respect to hear our defence statement read out, but that wasn't, he didn't want that to happen. Luckily my barrister argued and managed to get about half of it out, and which talked about the police brutality on the day, which hopefully if the other defendants and people which have been receiving custodial sentences try to appeal, if any of them do appeal, then hopefully my case can be used as an example of actually the police brutality against the protesters. Means that anybody arrested for violent disorder could quite easily be defending themselves.
Or at the time of this programme going out, everyone who was put in a not guilty plea mm-hmm. has walked free.
Yeah.
Cleared.
Yeah.
Are you going to take action against the police?
Yeah, we'll be suing the police for... I'm not sure the ins and outs of what we're going to be suing them for, but I hope wrongful arrest and police brutality. I don't know the legalities of the different terms of these things, but mm-hmm. yeah, we need to sue the police.
Well, as again I reiterate, we did invite the Metropolitan Police onto the show, and they declined on the grounds of sub judice, because some of the cases will be continuing until through to June. Mohammed,
on this point, yeah. There is many complaints against the police, but mm-hmm. no one. I mean, they didn't even open these complaints and they didn't even look at them. They put them aside and they concentrate only on the police story. So there is a tenth of complaints about the police brutality during the demonstration.
Who were the complaints made to?
By individuals and by organizations.
To the Police Complaints Commission or to the...
Yes, to the Police Commission, yeah. And nothing happened. Mm-hmm. We didn't even see one case opened on this for these complaints. And mm-hmm. They just only concentrated on their story and left these complaints aside.
Let's have a look at some of the cases which have been dealt with, so there's no sub judice issue here. A young sister was sent to prison and for violent disorder. She appealed and was released on appeal. And I understand another young sister who walked into a Starbucks coffee shop which had been wrecked. I think she was in there for a period of 6 seconds. She also found herself charged with violent disorder. What happened to her?
Actually, there is three cases now which they get freed. The two sisters and Jake, and I think in the next few days there is other cases will be appeared. Many of these cases were really fabricated in a way that there is footage on against them, and with this why we advise all these young men and women to appeal against their sentences, because there is a great hope that they will get free, or they will get
have
less
they had
sentences.
Bad legal advice? We can't just blame the police in all of this. Jake?
Yeah, totally outrageous legal advice. The fact that you've got duty solicitors advising people to plead guilty for crimes mm-hmm. they haven't committed. The duty solicitors haven't seen any video footage in a lot of these cases. They're just taking the police's word as a matter of fact, and then people are getting sent down. Any solicitor, defence solicitor, should question what the police are saying. The police targeting protesters, especially Muslims, to try and prevent them from demonstrating in a whole range of different demonstrations, not just over Palestine, over marches against kind of racists and things like that, defending the communities. Muslims are being attacked and picked up and advised by quite strongly not to go on demonstrations, and then they're attacked when they do go on these demonstrations. But we know from what my friend on the right has said about demonstrations in the past, that actually any progressive, democratic, free society, we see people protesting. Like, the reason we've got ordinary working people have to vote in this country is because of Peterloo in Manchester, where there was a massacre and people protesting for that, and women having the vote as well with the suffragettes and Martin Luther King and kind of a civil rights movement.
Well, of course, Nick, one of the complaints made against the Muslim community is that it doesn't integrate, it doesn't take part in the democratic process, and as Jake's just said, protesting is a very British thing to do.
Absolutely. I think the point I would make, though, is that the situation is very patchy. There will be, I think, moves to increase political control over the appointment of judges, because some judges and sheriffs are not singing the song the government wants. We've seen the protesters down near Heathrow against the Israeli Agrexco company have been allowed by the judge to put forward an argument that it's okay to break the law here against property, there's no one's harmed, in order to prevent a much greater crime being committed. And we've seen other examples of this. I think also we need to protect the right to trial by jury. I mean, had we come out on the wrong side of the sheriff up in our case in Scotland, it would have been my argument that, well, we better do it bigger next time.
Can we see some of the headlines as you're talking us through it was quite a sensational story. That one says, criticism of Israel is not anti-Semitism. Is the procurator fiscal, the man who lays the charges, is he appealing against this, or is he accepting the decision?
Well, somebody said about him, he's a very unappealing character, but we think he'll be appealing on this occasion. Well, we hope he'll be appealing. He asked leave to appeal. If he does, then he'll just be digging a much deeper hole for himself than the one he's in already. This is already case law. A part of the British legal system now says there's no connection between opposition to the Israeli state and all its criminality and hostility to any population. But my point was this, that juries are much, much better bets than judges. For example, the guys in Derry who went into the Raytheon factory when Israel was dropping bombs all over Lebanon and caused £250,000 worth of damage to the Raytheon factory, chucked the computers out of the window and so on and so on, went in front of a Belfast jury, and the jury unanimously acquitted them, even though they said, we did this, we violated laws of property.
So you would recommend not pleading not guilty in the majority of cases?
Absolutely.
And leave it to the jury.
Absolutely.
Most of them. Talking about people power, Kirti Karai returned to the so-called scene of the crime outside the Israeli embassy to get the people's verdict on what has been happening.
I'm in High Street, Kensington today, and I want to find the public's views on the Gaza protest and how well the police dealt with it. So let's find out. Do you think the law treats everyone equally?
Well, it should do, but I suppose perhaps it doesn't always necessarily in practice.
There are sort of injustices in the law where serious offenders get sort of a slap on the wrist, and those that don't offences seriously, you know, get heavy fines or community or even jail.
Do you think the police are treated above the law?
It depends who treats them. I think that they are a mediating and controlling force, but they're not always in control of their own policy. Their own policy is sometimes run by, let's say, other interest groups.
They shouldn't be. Obviously, I suppose there are a lot of people who are a little bit incensed that nobody was prosecuted over the Ian Tomlinson case from the G20 protests last year. And I think that causes, that kind of uneven treatment of the police perhaps causes people to sort of lose faith in the idea that they may not be above the law.
Why do you think the court imposed prison sentences on the first-time offenders, like in the Gaza protests?
Probably they were trying to make a point, but I don't know that the point was correct.
There's a problem with protest now. Nowadays, protest is seen as subversive of the reigning order. It never used to be the case. It used to be a safety valve for letting off steam within the parameters of society. But today's society feels very threatened by protest. And therefore, I think there's a more heavy-handed approach to protest than there used to be.
Well, you've heard the public's opinion. And that's all for me, Kirti Karai, for The Agenda.
Mohammed, were you surprised by the public reaction there from upscale Kensington?
I mean, it's not a surprise for me. Nobody above the law. This is what we are asking, to be everybody, to be under the law, actually. No one to be above the law. But the judge, what the judge did and the police did, they want to send a message to the Muslim community that you cannot go out and demonstrate any cases like Gaza and Iraq and Afghanistan. And this is a very dangerous message to the Muslim community.
It has been suggested, because of all the media attention that these trials at Isleworth Crown Court in West London are receiving now, that the judge has eased off the gas pedal. Can you perceive that? Is that happening, or...?
No, I mean, I don't have any details about this, but what I was going to say is a very dangerous message to give to the Muslim community, that you cannot go out, you cannot use your right to demonstrate against good cause you think it's a good cause. What the other means, these young men and women will go and find other means to express their feeling, and here it is very dangerous. Mm-hmm. If we cut this line to the Muslim community and tell them you cannot use your right to demonstrate or to do what the law allow you to do, then which means that you go and do it in the other way. And this is very dangerous message. And this is what we're trying to tell our Muslim community, that go and vote, go use your right to do it right, not to do it wrong. And that judges or what the sentences means that you cannot do it anymore in the right way.
So there's an action group formed now, and an appeal lawyer has been appointed. So do you think that a lot more young Muslims who were sent to prison will be released soon?
We are very optimistic that these sentences will be reduced at least, and some of them might be as well, some of these people might be freed. So we've got Imran Khan, he's the lawyer who's dealt with the Bradford riots, so he's very experienced.
Because similar things happened in Bradford.
Yes, yes.
So in 2001, I think, when lots of young Muslims
this
were...
We
also invited Judge Gillick, the judge who presided over the Bradford riots cases, onto the show, because there are alarming parallels between the two cases, and Muslims are targeted or caught in the middle, but he also declined to come on this show. Mick, I know that you want to make a point. What has happened in Isleworth Crown Court has now become a rallying point or a campaign issue with activists across the UK and beyond.
I think what Mohammed said, everybody should ponder very carefully. And I think this is a fight not just to end wars of aggression and to support the people of Palestine in their struggle for existence, but it's also really a struggle to keep open democratic means of resisting the government here in Britain. And the government seems determined to close off democratic bases of opposition. The example, the example of the Crown Court has been mentioned, but I'd like to mention another one, and that is that the song that was being sung in Edinburgh recently by the Procurator Fiscal is really the same song that Gordon Brown signed up to. There was a conference in London just over a year ago called the London Conference, at which the London Declaration was issued. Now, the London Declaration would criminalise many people who oppose the State of Israel's policies. It would make illegal, for example, certain ideas. The idea that Israel should not be a Jewish state, but as a Democrat, I think it should be a state of all its citizens, Jews and non-Jews. That would be criminalised. Now, this appalling declaration was signed by Gordon Brown. So
yes,
we have a situation.
It's not just a Labour issue, is it? I mean, the Conservatives
they've
and the Lib Dems.
Oh yes, but they're piling over each other to sign up to. What I'm trying to say is, what Mohammed has said is actually true in spades. Many, many different means of democratic opposition to this government are being closed off, and it's salami tactics, a little bit here and a little bit there. And I think we have to wake up before it's too late and really fuse together justice for the people who have been attacked abroad with our democratic rights here. I think it's the same issue, really.
Jake, how traumatic has this experience been for you, and will it stop you from campaigning for Palestinian rights?
It's been personally very, very, very emotional, very difficult. I wasn't able to see my family other than for 3 days during Christmas when I had my bail conditions changed. So for me it's been very difficult, but in perspective it's not been difficult at all compared to what it must be like to live in Gaza and to be under that, or to be in prison at the moment for a crime people haven't committed. I think one of my friends I was talking to him about the case, and he said, well, the people that are in prison are political prisoners. And I think I thought about it, and then I thought, well, yeah, they are. Wait a minute. And just in context with you talking about this judge as well, and the Islamophobia which is getting whipped up but by the mainstream parties against Muslims, it's racism against Muslims, and it's being whipped up. And I think, yes, Muslims as well as everybody else should use their vote, but it's also right to protest, and it's also right to come out in unity, because
they
show the 150,000 people of trade unions, of all different diverse families, etc., represents the real unity and solidarity for Palestine, not the individual Zionist judges. And
well, the only person that we didn't invite on the show was Judge Dennis, who is very busy at the moment presiding over these cases, which will go through to June, but obviously he's welcome to have his say on the agenda should he wish to do so. But Mohammed, you've heard from Jake, quite traumatic. What message in 20 seconds would you give to the Muslim community now?
I tell the Muslim community to go on, not to be afraid or to be scared about what's happened. It's the other way around. Actually, we have to move on. We have to move very steadfast and do what our community and our religion and our fellow society wants us to do, which is fighting for justice, fighting for a fair for everybody, Muslim and non-Muslims.
Well, very clear, strong message there. Thank you so much for that. We've reached that time of the show when we head over to James Rawson in our electronic post room to listen to your protests and opinions, peaceful or otherwise.
Well, first out of our electronic mailbag today was a message from John Russell of Coventry in the UK, who enjoyed our show on Venezuela. Can we have more on Latin America, please? It's not an area covered enough by Press TV, and this was a welcome surprise. I had no idea the United States had so much firepower pointed at Venezuela. Thanks for that, John. We'll see what we can do. And there was certainly no shortage of text messages from Nigeria, telling us what a fantastic job we're doing. But, of course, modesty forbids me from reading them out. And Dave Emanuel from Manchester wants to know how our Facebook followers managed to get in so many comments at the end of the show. It's simple, Dave. We let them know the topic being discussed a few days in advance. If you sign up to the Agenda's Facebook account, you can be ahead of the game too. And now on to today's subject, which certainly caused a stir. Can Muslims receive the same justice as anyone else in British courts? Was just one of the issues raised by our Facebook followers who wanted to give their views on today's show. First to deliver a verdict was Imam Ben Jadidi from Reading, who was emphatic. Definitely, they are penalised more heavily. Gaza protesters were jailed for throwing an empty pop bottle, while burglars and muggers get off with a slap on the wrist. Disgusting. And John Piacente from Adelaide in Australia admitted, I was thinking about this recently and was wondering how, in a climate of widespread and acknowledged prejudice against Muslims, courts are able to provide an adequately impartial jury. Daniel Saeed Khan Lodi from Karachi in Pakistan says he believes that the prejudice is clear. Meanwhile, Adid Riaz from the Midlands of England writes, "This is a crumbling system scared of true justice. We know about this justice from Bradford violence. They just want to give a message to others who dare to speak out, but they are provoking us more." And finally, Shaukat Qureshi from Oxford says, 1984, George Orwell, police state at US-UK. And following that Big Brother-style message, there's not much more for me to say. But if you want to write and get these sorts of issues off your chest, then do send your emails to theagenda@presstv.com. You can also contact us on Facebook or get texting at +44 780 00 0806. If you want to watch one of our past shows, simply log on to the website at presstv.com. Once there, click on the programs icon, then click on the agenda panel, and there's a whole host of shows for you to choose from. Thanks for watching, and back to you in the studio.
And so that just remains for me to say a very big thank you to all of our guests, and we'll see you all soon on the next agenda.